By the way, I brought some beers if you want.
Yes.
I was like, I don't know if I could.
Amazing.
I was like, I don't know if I could do it with it here, but.
That's perfect. I love it. That's how you start the episode. Yeah. By the way, I brought some beers.
Hey, this is Steph, and welcome to the Dead Man Walking Podcast. This is episode number 6, and it's with Luca Liberatore, a.k.a. Luca the Producer. I've known Luca for over 15 years. He was one of my best guitar students I've ever had, and now he's one of the hottest producers in the city, working with some amazing artists and winning major awards. In this episode, we talk about how he made the jump from performer to producer, a conversation that made him realize it was time for him to focus completely on music, and some of the artists he's working with today that are absolutely killing it. You can follow him on Instagram at Luca the Producer. If you like the show, please share with a friend, leave a comment, and if you want to know more about me and my guests, you can follow me at DMW Podcast. This is episode number 6 with Luca the Producer. Here we go. This is the Dead Man Walking Podcast.
So, Luca, man.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. So, hold on a second. Before we even, what were you doing around the area? You were saying that you were around here.
Oh, it's because I'm close. I'm at Planet Studio. So, I was working on some stuff.
I saw you've been doing quite a bit on Planet Studio.
Hey boy. Well, I rent out. That's where my studio is. It's there. Like, I have a little, like, setup and everything that I just come into, and I rent with another buddy of mine, Jacob.
Okay.
Who's a great mixing engineer. And we just split the room. We buy all the gear, and we just kind of furnish it and everything just for that. Like, and that's it. So, yeah.
Man, it's okay. So, what's up? First, before we even start, man, thank you.
Yeah,
I really appreciate you coming here.
Of course.
Taking the time. I know you're busy. I see a bunch of stuff going on online all the time.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you being here. And there's definitely a lot of history.
Yeah, big time.
But I'm curious. I can't wait to talk about the history.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to the future too. So man, thanks for being here. And welcome.
Yes, this is amazing. Like I said before, I love this logo. It's incredible. Love the whole setup, the whole vibe. It's really cool.
Thanks, man. And so... Let's start back to Planet Studio here.
Back to Planet Studio?
So what's going on? What's happening right now over there?
Well, over there, man. Okay, first of all, it's music every day nonstop. The thing is, over there, it's like I rent my space. Sometimes we work together. I'm very close with the owner, Dan. And so we work on some projects together. We're actually developing an artist right now who's really cool.
Can you talk about it? Or
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's this guy. His name's Patrick. And we're just like... He's kind of like a Louis Capaldi, but Canadian.
Okay.
That's how I can describe it. So it's like love songs and everything. The guy's got a voice like a champion, just like he's amazing. And so we're just developing him right now, and we're seeing what deals. We're just shopping him around, you know, seeing what's up.
But
and that's it.
You know, I remember we met a long time ago.
I was 15.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
And
I see you now as like Luca the Producer, right? So it's like kind of like I have two Lucas.
The branding works.
The branding is
as
working.
As cheesy as the name is, it works.
It's we get it. Oh, the moment you come on. And so it's so funny because I have like two visions of you. You know, I have this, not in a bad way, in a way where it's like I know you from this kid, like
shy,
playing guitar, shy.
Long hair, Nirvana shirt. Dirty. Just never fucking took it off.
Don't worry, I wasn't much different. And so I see you as this kid that walked in and like so curious and just always like really into it, but like shy, like you said, totally shy at the beginning.
I was super shy at the beginning.
And then now seeing you, all the stuff that you're producing and then just listening back to it, it's so different. It's like, there's such a sick evolution, to be honest.
I was a metalhead when we met, man.
I know.
I remember playing like Metallica in front of you because my old guitar teacher was this dark, like death metal guy that introduced me to like Cradle of Filth and all the like the gothic metal scene and stuff like that. And I was like, I loved it. I just liked everything about it because if it scared me, I liked it.
Well, that's why when I'm hearing the tracks and the stuff that you're producing now,
I'm doing pop.
Well, it's not like, I know everyone thinks of pop or whatever. There's the viewpoints on it, but dude, there's some artists that I was listening to. You did a fantastic job. Like, thanks, I was going through the site and looking at the posts and just looking at the artists that you're working with.
Thanks, man.
And some of the songs, I was like, whoa, you know, this is awesome. I wrote a few of them down. The Leonie Gray, was great. You know, Burgundy.
You posted that.
Yeah, that song. I was just listening to it over and over. And I
tell me, you caught the Beatles influence on those backup harmonies, right? When it comes in,
Beatles influence. Then there was one that it took me for surprise. I think, I don't know his name, Nas Plus or
Oh yeah, that's old. Yeah.
The
that
ending,
was us being just super experimental.
Well, yeah, that's what I loved about it. It was like you don't hear that too often, right? It starts off with this like very jazz feel or whatever, and sorry, not jazz. It starts off more like
on the hip hop
on a hip hop vibe, and then it ends with that jazz breakdown.
Yeah, that's him. He's a nut. Wow. He's just like, no, man, it has to be all this whole thing. I said, man, go ahead. I was like, go. Let's just put it in the track and see if it works. Because at first, I was like, this is not gonna work. I don't know what you're doing. Like, how are we gonna have a vocalist come in after? No. Forget the vocalist. Let's just shove her in. Okay. And at the time, I was like, so new, because that's a while I did that.
Yeah,
that's so new that I was like, all right, I'm down. Let's go. Let's try it. I'll fit it in. And oh boy. Yeah.
But how does a process start? So you know, like you were telling me, you were hesitant to do that ending.
Yeah.
And then what made you change? What made you, was it the artist itself?
It was the artist. He just said, no, I have this idea. I'm like, then let's go. Let's do it. So then he brought in a band and everything and they did the whole section. I was like, oh boy, how's this going to fit? And we just transitioned into it and I'm like, okay, it works.
So I'm always curious when it comes to producing because I'm not a producer. I'm not even going to talk about what the job entails.
I will tell you.
Exactly. That's what I was going to tell me. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about what being a producer is and also... like how you've grown in that field, right?
Oh,
from when you started to where you are today.
If I tell you the process, because oh my god, okay, first of all, maybe we should do the process first.
Go for it.
It's like, so I studied in Vanier. That's what we prepped for when I first met you. We prepped to get me into Vanier College to study with Nick DiTomaso.
Oh yeah. Oh man, I haven't heard that name. I think, like,
dude, I ran into him at Planet and I wanted to give him the biggest hug. I was so happy to see him. I almost cried.
Man, like, I haven't heard that name. Honestly, I don't think I've heard that name since 2004.
Dude. Yeah.
It's like almost 20 years ago. I can't believe it. Holy shit.
And that's possibly when we were studying together, 2004, 2005. And so, I did the music program, but then I saw the audio recording program there in Vanier and I'm like, okay, I'm down to do that because I realized in the music program, I was like, I don't want to become a bebop guitar player. It seems like that was the end goal for everyone. And I'm like, yo, that's not me. I love studios because at the time I was getting like, when I was in the old band, All Day Dreamers.
Yeah.
Right, growing up.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
exactly. I haven't heard that name in a long time. I remember we used to talk about that all the time.
We used to talk about it all the time.
We'd come into my house, I'd be playing, we'd be doing lessons together. You're like, my band, All Day Dreamers. It's like this fucking kid. I hope this band works.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was too funny. And Pino Minicucci was recording us.
Okay.
And he was recording us at basically the Freak Shop where it is now, but not in that studio. It was in another locale.
In the mothership.
Yeah, in the mothership. Exactly. And I was so inspired by what he was doing. I'm like, oh my God, dude, like, this is crazy. Like, just recording and everything that I was like, I have to get into this. And then as I was in Vanier meeting producers and seeing them actually being on the computer and doing stuff, I'm like, okay, I can do this. Let's go.
Did you feel like you were kind of transitioning from the musician to the production part of it? Yeah. And were you a bit afraid of that though?
No.
No?
No, because, well, this is going to sound so bad, but Vanier started making me feel like, I have to be a certain way. Like, I have to like music like this.
Oh, man.
And I was like, why aren't you teaching me, like, yes, let's learn jazz, but how can I apply it to modern music? That's what I wanted. Like, I get it. That's cool. And I like the 1960s. It's a great era for jazz and on. But like, dude, can we apply this to modern music? And even it took one teacher, Dave Clark, saxophone player.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Dave Clark?
Yeah.
He told us all once, he was like, if you think you guys are going to make a career out of jazz, like, good luck.
Yeah.
And that went like poof, like that. I just went, okay, that's it. He confirmed what I've been having anxiety about, literally getting panic attacks about my future being in Vanier. I couldn't practice properly. I could never freaking, like, the teachers would be like, you got to be practicing 5-6 hours a day.
Yeah.
I'm there like an hour and a half. Okay, cool. Like, and then I would go to my computer and try to learn how to produce songs.
It's so funny. I felt that exact way. At a certain point, I remember I did the extra year too on, I don't remember what it was, like the jazz stuff or whatever.
The performance.
The performance, right? And I did the 3 year and I remember walking out and I said, I'm really happy I did it. Like, I completed it, but I didn't know what to do with it after. I felt lost. And like I was telling you earlier, then when my band was doing well, it was kind of like, okay, great. And then I made it to McGill.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this is the route, you know, for musicians. And then I said, but I don't want to play this music.
Nope.
I wasn't a rock band. I was a hard rock band. I wanted my band with those originals to make it, not to be a jazz artist. And then I, like I was saying earlier, I had to make that decision. Okay, am I staying in school? Am I going to leave? And I agree with you. Like when you have those wake up calls, there's something about those calls that it's telling you something.
It's a gut feeling.
It's a gut feeling. Exactly.
You just stick to it. And that's exactly what happened, man. I went into the sound program and I excelled in that program really well because I already had like a base knowledge of how to produce and how to compress things and how to like work audio. Because I was doing it during the music program, right? I wasn't even practicing that much guitar. I was always on the computer. Like, okay, wait, let me grab these stems that I found online from a garage band and like try to mix it.
Yeah.
Make it sound cool. You know? And so, yeah, after that, I went into doing live sound. I was like working at Piranha Bar.
Oh, man.
For years.
I'm actually going to Piranha Bar in April. Ashville Gates is going to be playing there.
Oh, my God. Nice.
Okay. So
dude, I went there. I was working there doing the whole metal scene, but at the same time, I was doing sound at the House of Jazz.
Oh, shit.
I was working at the House of Jazz for years, for like 4 years. So in those 4 years, and I was getting paid like garbage because the owner didn't trust me. He was an old man. He was just like, who's this kid?
He's giving you those eyes. I don't trust this kid.
He's like, I'll pay you $50 a night. And you and stay here from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till midnight. I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, you're like,
I left
you.
My job at Pink Taco, bro.
Pink Taco. Yeah,
I was like a busboy and I was making good money. And I remember the owner, the manager, Joe, and the owner, Carlo, they were both like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, I got to go do this thing. Yeah. It felt right, even though I didn't care about the money. I was like, I live at my parents' house. I don't care. So yeah,
if I got to take the chances.
Yeah.
And I don't take them now. When the fuck am I going to take
them? Exactly. My parents thought I was crazy. But I'm like, no, it's fine. And so I worked my way up, got the owner's trust and everything. The wages went up and everything was going good. And I was happy, but I was meeting a bunch of people in the music industry.
Sure.
I was always meeting, like, if it was a musician or it was someone who writes in the Gazette, just a music area or stuff like that, the Gazette. But you know what I mean? Like, just like I was always making connections there.
If you're always in the scene, you're bound to meet someone.
Exactly what happened. So I ended up meeting this musician, a guitar player named Jesse, and he's like, yeah, I'm at Planet Studio, man. I love your sound. It sounds really good. You know, you've been mixing for a while. I said, yeah, over here for a bit, then at like Piranha Bar. And he's like, man, okay, cool. You should come by Planet Studio. Shoots me his card. I'm like, sick. I go to his room and it's this beautiful like little room in Planet Studio, which is gorgeous. And he's like, yeah, I'm looking for a partner for like to share the space to pay rent. I'm like, pay rent? I'm living at my parents' house. I'm like, I've never done that before.
What's rent?
And I know, and it's so crazy because
my dad told me I'd never pay rent.
Exactly. Dude, what's crazy is that I was like, I never thought numbers. I never thought money because you lived at your parents for so long, even in my 20s, you know, until I was 25. And that's when I moved out. But like, dude, I think it was, around 25 that I started paying rent at Planet and like kind of doing my thing, and I was not at all where I should be. I just said, fake it till you make it, bud.
Yeah,
that's all I did. I said, fake it till you make it. I'm gonna do the best I can with. I grabbed one artist from Vanier, a singer.
Who was it?
This guy Reza. We did some like hip-hop stuff. I don't think it's on the website. Okay. It's kind of down, I think, off the platforms. But it was like R&B stuff. He was doing like Drake vibes, like mellow stuff. So I'm like, perfect. So I just developed with him a bit. And we did a lot of bad songs, a lot of cool songs. And that's
part of the process.
And then just grew from there.
So that's pretty cool. Like the fact that you didn't even know what you were doing. You decided to do it. And that's usually when the stories really get good. To be honest, it's like, because you kind of shit in your pants a bit.
Yeah.
You're like, how the fuck am I going to pay for this?
Make it work.
And then when you're in that scenario of just, I got to fucking figure it out.
Yeah.
You always figure it out.
Exactly.
You at the beginning, thinking about it, you're finding all the reasons why it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And then the moment you actually get in it, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
That's it. I just got to make this amount of money every single month. I got to pay this shit because I'm not leaving now.
Yeah. But you see, that's the thing. I was not thinking the money anymore. I was still like, no, it's okay. Like I never thought money. It was always like, what's the next artist or what can I do? I was just trying to get my name out.
Yeah.
I was never thinking about money.
Well, I the money part, exactly. Like, the reason why you weren't thinking about it is because you were like, I got to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
And then I just got to, whatever bare necessities I need to do to pay this rent. Because if I'm not here, I'm not going to meet these people.
Exactly.
So exactly that. Yeah. It's like, it became, I'll do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
I'll work at $50 a night. Mm-hmm. I'll do whatever it is. I'm going to meet all these people. I'm going to bring in all these artists. And if it means that I am going to have to work a shit job that I don't really like just to get that money for the rent to stay in Planet Studios. That's my
next point. Because I... First of all, I got fired from, since I've been like, I think I was like, 20, like whatever, 18, all my first jobs, I was let go. It was always like, this is not for you. It was always like that. And then I worked at a go-kart track when I was 18 in RDP, the go-kart track in RDP.
The one on Henry Barassa.
That one. Yeah.
Everyone knows this fucking go-kart
track. Exactly. I was there for 3 years. It was the best job ever. It was like easy, no problem. But if it was an office job where they tell me what to do and it's like punching the numbers and everything, BMO, I got fired from BMO.
Holy shit. I remember. Yeah. You worked at BMO.
And I did 6 months.
Yeah.
I did 6 months because I was like, I'm in Vanier. I'm trying to, you know, get things going or whatever. I made it 6 months and my manager said, you know what? You're in music. Maybe you could go write a song about this. It was the biggest insult he could ever say to me, like to fire me and tell me, go write a song about it. Ciao. Close the doors.
No way.
Head office downtown. I'll never forget that. That was a moment that I was like, I'm going to remember this.
Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny when someone burns you?
Oh.
I know for me, 12 years old. I'll never forget this.
12 years old.
I was 12 years old and I don't know who's fucking the genius at our high school that decided to put...
PMC.
Yeah, right? They decided to put secondary one, like kids that just walked into high school with Sec 5 like bands for the variety show, which is in one way kind of cool because you meet these older students and all this stuff. And they put like, okay, if you were playing guitar, so I was playing guitar at the time. And they're like, okay, you play with this band that's like all Sec 5s. And so you get there and you're playing. And the song that that we were doing, I don't remember the other ones, but I clearly remember this one was Everything I Do For You from Bryan Adams. Okay, that's what we're playing. And I get asked to do the solo.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a hard solo. It's really not.
No.
But when you're 12 and you suck,
it sucks.
It sucks, right?
Yeah.
And you fucking suck. So I get on stage and, you know, there's a video somewhere. I think I have it on a VHS tape or whatever it is. And I'm playing and I suck, right? Fucking missing notes, everything. And I just see this one guy, Brian, behind. And he just pulls this face like, oh.
No.
Like on stage. So it's caught, like on camera. Like he's like, oh, this kid sucks. And I'm like, I remember when I rewatched that video and I saw Brian's face. I said, that motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm going to play every day. I'm going to practice. I'm going to show this motherfucker that I am going to learn how to play well. And it's so crazy. Like when someone does something to you that burns you, you know, I find it's either you get destroyed by it or it actually pumps you up. And for me, it was like that moment pumped me up. When I saw this guy, I said, I remember 4 or 5 hours, I'd lock myself up in my room and I would just practice all day. So is that like the same thing when
it's the same thing, but it's also like it pumped you up in one domain only.
Yeah.
Not for everything you're doing. It only pumped me up for one thing. And so, okay, you want to say, okay, write a song about it. In my mind, I went, I'm going to remember this. If I get a Grammy, I'm going to say I wrote a song about it. And that's it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, buddy. And I remember his name.
How's your job, bro? Yeah.
Like I wrote a song about it. But then I got another office job years later because at one point, like every job, right? There's an up and down.
Yeah.
I couldn't just do this the live sound thing.
The high studio at the beginning is like, okay, this is all working. But then you start realizing this, it's taking away the time from the real thing.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, I got to, you know, make more money, make the girlfriend happy and this and that. Because the reality was, it was like, oof, I don't think that's enough. So the studio and the live sound. So I let go of the live sound and I get an office job and I'm doing studio at night. Now this is where I was like black, like everything. I was overworked and I lasted a year there at the office. And then the main manager, the boss, she comes up to me and she was a life coach too on the side.
Okay.
She just comes up to me. She's like, I don't know what it is about you, but she's like, I know you're tired. You come in here. You're just exhausted, but I feel like you need to stop this. And I'm telling you this now because you're not doing well. She's like, we can tell that you're not focused.
Yeah.
On calls, they could hear it. I'm not focused. They're like, but I feel like you need to do music full time. I'm a life coach. I know this. I see it in you. Do it full time. I said, you know what? Yeah. That's it. I don't care. Go. And then I did that.
It's pretty cool though that she gave you that kind of advice.
Oh, like, and she cried. She cried in front of me and I was like, but okay, t'es sérieux? Like, I'm like, Joanne, what's going on? And she's just like, I don't know what it is. She's like, I feel like you're doing the wrong thing. You should be doing this full time. I'm like, all right, that's it. I went there.
And then when you started that,
everything started coming together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what though? What happened? Like you, so you left that place and then you were going 24/7.
And then I went through a hard time again because I left a relationship I was in. Okay. Right. And I was living with that person and it was great and everything, but
just didn't work out.
Yeah. I had to let it go because she didn't see the vision that I had.
It's tough. It's tough when someone doesn't see the same vision.
Yeah.
Then you're battling. You're battling at home. Then you're there and you're thinking about it and you're trying to fix shit. But
yeah,
you know. And then sometimes it's. I think as you get older, for me personally, you know, some things have to end. You know, it's like when you're younger, it's like no, these things can't end. We have to hold on. And sometimes you're like, nah, man, this shit's just got to end. You know, like
exactly.
And the end is good for everybody. It's not like it's just good for me. It's exactly. good for her and it's good for me. It's good for whoever was involved. And we both need to move on because, you know, it's okay. Exactly. It's okay that a relationship ends. It's like when you're younger, you're just so obsessed with making things work.
Dude, I was so down. Like after that, it was like, oof. But when I left, it was like in Seinfeld, Band-Aid right off. That's it.
Yeah.
Like seriously, it was like, okay, wow, weight off my shoulders. And then it was like clear vision. Get to the studio every day. And I took my job back. I think I was doing live sound again, but for other things, but I was doing just music.
Yeah.
Whatever I was going to the studio, work on music. Then at night, go do some live sound, this and that. I was just strictly doing music until I could let go of the live sound and just strictly do music. And so, yeah, just things started falling together.
And so who was the first act when you decided kind of like to, when you left the live sound and then you went to solely being in studio, was there someone that you kind of like started working with at that yes. first stage, and that's kind of where things started building and snowballing after that?
Yeah. It was my publisher at the time. His name is Jay Lefebvre. He really saw something and he was like, okay, we can do this together. And he basically kind of coached me through, you know, processes on how the whole music industry works. And, you know, like I have a lot of respect for that guy. And we basically kind of worked on projects together. He puts me on a project for like Rock Voisin. I'm like, who's Rock Voisin? I don't know this guy.
My cousin was his manager.
Are you serious?
Yeah, at some point. I don't know if he still is, but at one point he was. I remember when we were younger, like they used to always talk about, oh, you know, this guy, he's the manager. And I'm blanking out on his name. Anyways, he was like, he was the manager of Rock Voisin for years. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. And like, it was a fucking big name for Quebec, man. Rock Voisin was huge.
Exactly. When I told my parents, they're like, what do you mean?
You're everyone, if you're in Quebec, you know who Rock Voisin is.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, if you're in Quebec on the east side of Montreal, you don't know.
Yeah. You might not know. You might
exactly.
not.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I did like additional prods for like some of those projects. And then, you know, I'd get my own clients, people hitting me up on Instagram because I'd always take a photo. But I also did little things where I'd find like some like multi-tracks online to practice my mixing.
Yeah.
I'd find like just garage bands submitting multi-track. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just mix it. Like I'll just try. You don't submit it back to them. It's just you're there to practice. That's it. So then I would film. I'd kind of be like, oh, I'm working on some metal today. I'm not lying. It's not for a client, but I'm working on metal today.
Yeah.
And so you'd have some guys like, yo, dude, you want to like mix my project? Yeah, no problem. Send me a stamp. Okay, cool. And then it started. And then, okay, doing some house. Okay, cool. But then it was like more on production stuff where I would make my own beats and then be like, I'm working on some house today or whatever. And then people would start hitting me up and pop artists and this and that. And then it just started growing.
Yeah, because it seems like you were saying, there was that introduction, you were going in and then things started picking up and then it kind of exponentially grew.
Yeah.
And so after that, those first few artists, What was the reaction from people that kind of started coming to you and saying, hey, I want you to do this now? Like,
it was, I think, also with the way I treat vocals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And also, I think there's a big aspect where on my energy level wise, I'm not being cocky about this, but a lot of girls, I'm always working with girls. If you see this, it's like,
I was gonna ask you.
I'm the guy that works with girls. It's like, it's weird.
I scrolled down at one point, I'm like,
It's all girls.
Yeah. Not in a bad way, but I was just but you capture something. I have to admit, every single girl that you're working with, there's something right now that you're getting out of them. Mm. Like vocally, there was, I wrote it down. I was like, I loved it. Aza. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that properly.
Yeah, you are.
That track, I wrote it down, so Turn to Gold.
So expert. Again, you're naming older stuff though.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like that's some older stuff. And then, but that was when I listened back to it, because I like doing the idea of like, if I'm going to talk to someone, even though I know you, I want to go back. I want to see where things started, because usually that's where kind of like the foundational pieces of a lot of stuff is happening and they don't even know it.
Yeah.
And so I'm hearing, you know, that production of it and I'm like, holy shit, that intro, it's the harmonies at the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. But that's all her though. Aza is insane because she was like, I have this idea, and she shows me a demo that she built herself. And I'm like, I kind of get it. But at the time, I was in a band called The Ver, and we literally would do, you know, James Blake?
Yeah.
His music. Okay. He's super experimental. I became obsessed with James Blake because I thought this guy takes production to another level where he doesn't care. It could be offbeat. He'll make it with his voice. It sounds good. Everything works. And you can't even nod your head to it because it's like the drums are offbeat, but it
works.
Keeps you in. And it's like really nice. And so I liked that whole experimental stuff. So when she showed me just her little demo, I'm like, okay, I'll try this. And again, I was still at the beginning stages and I'm like, you want to do this? Let's go.
Why not?
Like, I think I get what you're going for. So I was doing it with some sounds and this and that. And then it ended up being cool. And then years later, she's like, hey, listen, I'm finally going to release it. We're going to tweak the sounds a bit. Mm-hmm. She sends it to her, I think her husband or her boyfriend. And he's also a producer. He tweaked a few sounds and it became like this big collab. Ciao Bye.
Great song.
It was cool. It was really cool.
Great track. And that's why. So when I was listening back, as I said, okay, I'd like kind of going through the, maybe I'm bringing that through memory lane, but there was a few that really popped up for me. Leona Gray was fantastic. Nas Plus, or I don't know if that's the name of the artist.
I think so, yeah.
Aza really stuck out. But then there was also Lilian DeFrancesco. And yeah, Cinzia, we'll get to Cinzia. We both know Cinzia. It's a long time. But I mean, Lilian DeFrancesco was...
That track is IDC. One of my favorite. Yeah, one of my favorite. That track is so
that
special.
Chorus.
Yep.
That chorus is absolutely phenomenal.
There's so many aspects to it that I like about that song. Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, she got the original writer that she collabed with is Luca Fagale. Luca Fagale is an artist on Universal.
Okay.
And so Lily's project, we were working in French and a few songs in English, but there was a lot more in French and we were working on it. And there's so many, like, just demo after demo after demo after demo, which caught the ear of one of the A&Rs at Universal. He heard it, signs her, and then puts her on a bunch of writing sessions.
Okay.
And they come up to me, they go, Luca, what you did was good work with her. However... I was like,
well,
what?
It kind of nice though.
Yeah, like,
the fact that they compliment you and then giving you advice too.
Yeah, they're just like, listen, unfortunately, all the stuff you guys did, we don't know when we're going to release that. It's very pop, but there's this one song you guys have that was written by Luca Fagale and Lily that you produced. That's the first song we're going to release with. And we're going to go with that vibe, like the dark pop vibe for her. And I'm like, okay, that's great. I'm not even insulted. After 8 songs, you're taking one. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm happy you're taking one. And it just so happens to be the opening of This Is Lilian DeFrancesco. Dude, that song, there were so many aspects about it that, like, vocally, I made her work so much because, like, you could ask her, like, it was just harmony after harmony after harmony. I was like, wait, no, we got another one. Boom, 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 boom. And we were just doing layers on layers on layers. Yeah. It just didn't stop. And I was just like so happy with it because it's like, it was just piano and vocals. That's all we had.
That was the base of it.
Yeah.
So who started, because the vibe is like you were saying, it was a dark vibe, right?
Yeah,
there's
that's
this
all
darkness to it. It's really like, there's a hurt. You hear the song and there's like, I don't know if something really happened to her.
Yeah, she was going through some stuff.
Because you could feel it on the track.
Yeah.
So I was like, if she didn't have something like, man,
no,
wow. It felt so real. Like, I listened to the track over and over and I said, this is a fucking great song.
Yeah, no, I'm super proud of that. That, everything about it, the piano and all that stuff. I'm not even the best piano player. I was just like, okay, here we go. Let's reproduce whatever's on that demo and trying. And then just adding in those dark elements to make it as dark as possible, even the nothing too bright, to just make everything the right way. It was really cool. And then I mixed like crazy.
Okay, you mixed that one as well.
Best mixes I've ever done. So many people complimented me on the mixing because I'm like, dude, I spent days on that to make.
So how does the mixing process work? Like, if you break it down when you're mixing a track like that, right? And you, because you were hearing something, right?
Yeah.
So how are you how are you turning those thoughts and those sounds that you have kind of locked up in your mind? Mm-hmm. And how are you breaking that down through the programs and just all the work that you're putting into? How do you kind of navigate that?
I just don't stop. Because I know what the tools do, mm-hmm. then whatever I have in my mind for the sound, then I'm like, well, I know with that plugin, I'm going to get that sound. I have to get that sound. That's the way I'm going to build it. So it's like kind of just go. And that's kind of how I start going. And at the same time, when I'm producing, I'm saving myself time. If I know I'm the mixing engineer on the record, well, I'm mm-hmm. saving myself time. I'm mixing as I go.
Okay.
So it always sounds like good, and it's like it's sitting well, and it's like it's easy to produce. Because when you know how to mix at the same time,
yeah.
it's easier to produce for you because you have everything sitting right.
You're prepping it properly. So yeah. that way, the editing, the mixing, and all that, you're kind of already setting it up for it to be mixed.
Yeah, but it's already done, technically. It's like I'll send this to a mixing engineer, and it's like, okay, man, bro, kiss freakish fast. Like, what do you want me to do? And it's just like, I add your touch. They're like, no problem. And they do their thing. They find little problems. It's not perfect. And then it's even that much better. So it's cool. Especially the mastering that they did on it, because I didn't master it. It was Universal. Insane. I was just like, perfect.
So now a collab like that she's connected to Universal.
Yeah.
Did that open up doors for you as well?
Yes, it did.
I could imagine, because yeah. I'm sure, because the song sounds, like I said, the song sounds great.
Oh, man.
It has like the vibe, like the way she sings it, the way the video is great too.
Yeah.
The music sounds great. And then it's connected to a major label like Universal.
Yeah.
I'm sure it opens up, you know, the doors for a look with a producer to maybe connect with more artists.
Definitely. It did. And also a side note about that song, something I find really genius in the writing about that song, mm-hmm. I have to say it. I always try to put as many catchy elements in a song. That vocal, because her chorus is like, but I care, but I don't, yeah, I care, mm-hmm. but I don't care. I'm like, yo, that's a nursery rhyme.
Yeah.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that will connect with everyone. Exactly.
I couldn't get it out of my head.
That's what, when I first heard it, I said, we need to do this. Like,
yeah.
I need to be like the producer on this song, because as soon as I hear like something like that, that's like a little nursery rhyme, you're teasing a melody like that, it's going to stick to everyone's ear.
Yeah.
Like that's it. No matter what, how well the song does or not, people are going to be singing that like in their ear. So I was like so connected to it. So it's a good songwriting technique by Luca Fagali or Lily, whoever came up with that line. It was amazing.
But yeah, so like yeah. that song, I'm sure it opened up doors. So what did it change? Because I saw you, then you went to LA.
I went to LA.
And you look like a little kid. Like a. Yeah. I saw some of this stuff and I said, I think Luca had a mini boner every single.
I was shaking in LA. I was terrified, man. Shaking. Well,
but you were kind of like, it looked like it actually, the feeling I got from what yeah. you had posted and the way you kind of expressed that whole trip and your thought process is like, it almost reinvigorated you.
It did. It totally changed my production, the way I produce music.
What happened?
Watching how they produce, because they produce in a sense of, I don't give a shit. They're just like in audio school and yeah. a lot of the producers that I would meet here, there's always like this, yeah, but when you compress a vocal, you don't want to.
It's limited.
It's very, oh my God, you got to be careful with this. There's so many rules. And these guys don't give a shit. They're just there like, bah, crank the knob, let's go. And it's quick. And I'm like, oh my God. Like I was looking at them like, this is the way you do it. Because they don't want to ruin the vibe in the studio. Yeah. They're all about like, let's just make sure that the vibe stays and everything's quick. I changed everything. That was before Lily, by the way. It wasn't after. So it was before Lily. So I was just like, oh my God. Okay, this is what I need to do. When I came back, way stronger. Just by taking more risks when I'm producing. Take any tool, like whatever. If this is a tool for guitar, yeah. put it on a vocal, see what it sounds like. Oh, wow. And it's like,
it's different. It's funny you say that. Like, it always seems like it's the same story. When people talk, it's like at the beginning, you're hearing all these people mm-hmm. giving you this advice and telling you, you know, you should do this and you should compress that and you listen to this and be careful, don't cross that line. And you kind of feel like this is the truth and I need to stay within those parameters
yeah.
because if I want to be a good producer or if I want to be a good insert whatever job title you want to call yourself, those parameters are always like I need to follow those rules. And then the moment you break those parameters, you realize I'm actually a producer now.
And look at what we've been talking about since the beginning, the music program, break the parameters. That's what they want you to do, is the bebop, the stuff that break that parameter, leave. And then, oh, okay, the job, you can stay in this job, make good money. And then, no, I'm going to make less money and kind of sacrifice. And
yep.
it's true. Like exactly what we're saying.
So
yeah.
now with that track, there was Lily, there was Cinzia, which we both know for a long time. So Cinzia, yeah. like I know her from my Bell Media days.
Oh yeah.
And it's fucking funny girl.
She's amazing.
You know, the sarcasm she's out of that girl
funny.
Is next level.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how we kind of reconnected again, yeah, too, was through her. We went for drinks. Yeah. And so how did that project start with Cinzia?
Oh, my God.
Because that seems like it's a long-lasting one, though. Yeah. It feels like it's been a few years now.
Mm-hmm. So one of my best friends, Frankie, he lived in Montreal North. He's neighbors with Cinzia. And I was friends with Cinzia's sister in high school.
Okay.
And so I remember this one day, I must have been 14. I go into Cinzia's place with my buddy Frankie, and she's playing guitar and she's singing.
Oh, her voice. And,
but yeah, it's
next level.
Not to say that her voice didn't evolve. Of course it evolved. Yeah. But she had that little tone that she has.
It's
that,
a smokiness.
Yeah, it's like a smoky tone. It's boxy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's naturally. Like, it's not an effect. It's exactly. That's her voice.
That's how she sings. That's what comes out. And it's like, huh. And like, I remember just telling myself like, oh shit.
Wow. Yeah.
And then years later, I'm at Planet and I'm just kind of developing artists. Like I'm trying, you know, like I said, I was, you know, kind of faking it till you make it, whatever. But then we start talking back and forth, and Cinzia still has our first conversation. It's too funny. Where it's just like, hey, I have this spot, you know, you should come by. Yeah, you could tell she's like a little hesitant. Okay, yeah, sure. And then she came by, we did one demo, and then one worked on another song. And then we just vibed really well. And she felt comfortable because she's known me for like quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay. And then we just didn't stop since that day. It's just been like, now come to think of it, it's like we never stopped. It was just always...
Well, she's
going and going and going.
I think like one out of every five posts, she always mentions your name, right? So,
oh my God, true.
Like, it's not in a bad way, in a good way. No, like, she's always way. Like, oh, this collab. Yeah. And it seems like you, like, even the, I think it was the Little Italy EP that she had released. I think you had worked on that one.
Yep, the full thing.
The full thing? Okay, I wasn't sure if you had done just a few tracks.
We got so experimental and funny with that thing. There's that song, Little Italy, off the record. We went to Little Italy and I just walked around with a handheld mic recording. And we're just chilling and we're walking and I'm just hitting record on, it was a nice night where people are eating outside in the summer and I'm capturing all the vibes of Little Italy.
Just,
oh. I was like, I have to do it. She's like, this is like crazy. Yeah. And you hear an old lady come out talking in Italian on the phone.
Perfect moments. Perfect.
All these perfect moments of people just eating outside and hitting the, you know, the silverware. I'm like, oh my God, I'm cranking.
You were getting your inner Billy Joel in you?
Oh, dude, I don't know. I was just like, let's go. Like, I just wanted to capture everything. I put it in the background and the whole track is just in the background, low, just to capture something, anything.
Well, it seemed like that was a special time too, even for her. Yeah. Like, I know, like, we won't jump into a Cinzia's all story, but I remember like even her, she had her moment. She was going through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt like almost that album was like a breakthrough for her too. Like, personally, like even as a singer, as a songwriter, she really kind of dove into that. Then you could hear it in the tracks. Like you could hear it was a big difference from how she was prior to that. And then now, and then even now, like,
oh dude, the new stuff that we're doing is totally different. We're going on we went on a whole different route and we finished it. We closed the book like maybe a few months ago.
Okay.
Masters are in, everything's done.
Nice.
Closed the book and that's it. So I told her, I'm like, Cinzia, now go. Go with this album, do your thing. Because we both had to tell each other, okay, we worked like crazy, close the book.
Yeah, move on.
It's done now.
Yeah, we got to move forward on this.
Yeah, now it's push.
But I see that she's working also with another artist that, I wrote it down, hold on, blanking out. It was really good. Well, I listened to some of his stuff.
Oh, Clarel.
Clarel, that's it.
Yeah, that's the recent collab.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
So what's that collab about? But you're involved in that collab or is that, okay.
We were doing it, we did it a while back and we just all got in a room together and we all said we wanted to make a song that was so simple, the chorus to be so simple, like Let It Be. Mm. We're like, how can you make something that's like, so simple?
Yeah, make it good.
Yeah,
like, make it good.
And not too cheese.
Yeah.
And whatever those posts that she's doing with that song, it's like, that's the chorus. It's just over and over to get people, you know, get in people's heads. But that's it. We just kind of said, that's the vibe. Let's make sure it's like the simplest chorus and just capture it. And that's it. Yeah.
So
it's a simple sesh.
It's pretty cool. Like I see, like you've been working with some of these artists and you've seen the evolution with those artists, like Cinzia, I think Liliane as well. You've been working with her for a bit now. I saw a few songs. There was also Jessica Taddeo.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So I'm seeing like, there's this evolution with these artists and they keep on coming back with you and they keep on working with you. What is it that you feel like you're bringing to the table that makes them? I know it's like it's a weird question because it's talking about yourself, you know, so people feel a little awkward. But well, what is it that you think that's making these people come back and say, I want to keep working with this guy? He's bringing something out of me.
I think my strength that everyone has ever told me is that when I'm in a session, yes, they like the prods. They like the sound and it sounds modern. It's good. It doesn't sound like cheap. It sounds like the quality's there. Cool. But it's also when we're writing, when we're in the writing phase, I tend to shoot out melodies for verses, shoot out melodies for choruses that land on the record.
Yeah.
That they're just like, no, that's it. So in the industry, they call it top lining. So okay. I'm a good top liner. I'll get called in still to this day where I'll be at working at Planet and I'll get my buddy Tom Lapointe, who's another producer. He's Leonie Gray's producer.
Okay.
And he'll call me and he'll knock the door. He's like, bro, I have an instrumental. I need you to like hum some stuff on top of
it. So the Vanya classes was worth it in the end.
I guess. I don't know. I think it's more like listening to a lot of like pop music and analyzing what's going on in the melody and why does it sound so cool. Those notes against those chords, what's going on. It's like, I get kind of crazy like that. But not too crazy. It's kind of like, okay, I get it. I get what's going on. And then you start seeing patterns in every hit song and you're like, ah.
It's funny you say that. My buddy Dan from Astro Gate said the exact same thing because he took a time off. Like he was working at a corporate gig.
Okay.
And then he had the same thing. He was like, this is enough for me. Like I don't want to be in this world. He's a fantastic guitarist.
Yeah.
And he was like, I think I need to make a decision. And he made the decision. And then he took like a year of just learning how to be a songwriter.
Yeah. Dom or?
Dan. Dan okay. Bano. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I know
so that. he took I think it was a year of just exclusively every day writing a song. Like he was doing these classes, Berkeley online. And he just focused literally on just songwriting and understanding the process of songwriting. So it's so funny that when you more and more people that are doing well, it's not that there's a code but it's an understanding of how things get structured and then fucking with the structure.
It's
not staying with there. It's like understanding it and then fucking with it, you know? Yeah. So it's funny you're saying pretty much almost the same thing like he told me.
Well, exactly. Even like what I said before about Lily's track is where it sounds like a lullaby.
Yeah.
That's a technique. That's a very cool technique to use. A lullaby technique is what I'm saying to use in a song. It'll always ring in your ear. The melody though.
Yeah.
So it's like... Yeah, it's all little things like that. Or even how, like, it's, I always say this in sessions where I'll listen back and then sometimes we're like, what's making us feel like the song is super linear right now? What's happening? And I'll know right away and it's always the same answer. It's when people start their rhythms, let's say they're singing the verse.
Yeah.
They start on the one. Their melody just goes, bah, and then it just starts.
Yeah.
Right there. Then their pre-chorus, they're starting on the one. Their chorus, they're starting on the one.
It's the same feel, the whole song.
It's the same feel. And I'm like, you ever listen to a pop song? Literally, if the verse starts on the one, well, the pre-chorus is going to start before, like on the four. And then after the chorus, he'll wait, they'll start on two. And then it's like, what the hell? And then you do it and you show the example and it's like, oh shit. And I'm not saying that that's always the way they start and they finish.
Yeah.
It's just that it's always different. And it's like, dude, it's all little, it's not psychoacoustics, but it's just psychology. It's almost like a... It's not psychology. What is it? It's just
it's
the
I guess
way
it's,
your brain works.
It's triggering certain things in your mind that it's capturing attention.
Yeah.
And so if it's always, well, it's like anything, right? If it's always consistently the same thing for anything that you do, and then you always do it at the same time, then people, it becomes white noise.
Exactly.
And no one recognizes it.
Exactly.
So you start playing with just even that different beat coming in, lagging maybe behind the one.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even being a little late. That was kind of like the thing that I loved about jazz was when it's lagging or when it's late.
Yeah.
I used to, for me personally, whenever I'm listening to a record, I fucking... hate when it's perfect, like when everything is always so tight on the one, or and then all of a sudden when you start hearing that there's those offs, there's those mistakes, even you catch certain mistakes on tracks, like older tracks or whatever it is from older bands, and then you listen back, you're like, that's definitely a mistake that they kept on the record. But that's the best part of it,
dude. Your CD that you made me, I probably still have when we first got together. This is amazing. When we first got together, you're like, okay, you listen to System of a Down, you listen to some crazy death metal shit, and you listen to, what was it, Metallica. He's like, that's all good. Good stuff. Now I want you to listen to some of this. And because I grew up, my parents, they only listened to soul music.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, Al Green, Teddy Pendergrass. I'm a huge Teddy Pendergrass fan. Yeah, I know, it's weird.
I didn't see this coming, but go, I love it, I love it.
And then on Saturdays when your parents are cleaning and they're blasting music, it was salsa music. Why? My mom, and disco, Bee Gees, nonstop.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was always R&B, soul, R&B and disco, R&B and disco all the time. No one showed me rock, except for my cousins, but like it was still Metallica. Or else Korn, which I fucking still love to this day. Yeah.
Dude, Rage Against the Machine.
Exactly. We were both at the Korn show. Yeah, I think we both filmed. We're like, yeah, you're there. Yeah. So that CD, you showed me Led Zeppelin, Guns N' Roses. And I remember coming back to you. And Aerosmith. What's the song? Crying. Yeah.
Oh man.
You put that on it because you're just like, he needs some, a bit of this and this and AC/DC. And I remember coming back to you. I said, I love all these songs, except I really don't like this band. And it was Guns N' Roses.
Okay, we got to cut.
Yeah, I know. It's, I know. Over. You loved Guns N' Roses. I was like, I can't get attached to the singer. And still, like, it was the only band, and still growing up to this day, that everyone would be like, yo, Guns N' Roses. I'd be like, yeah, but Led Zeppelin. And still,
yeah.
But that's your fault. And Since I've Been Loving You was on it. So this is what we're getting at, the mistakes. Since I've Been Loving You is on it. Still to this day, my favorite Led Zeppelin song. There's mistakes that he makes on the guitar that when I play the song alone, I still replicate the mistakes that he does.
That's what it is. Like for me, I was a huge fan. Like, you know, like I was a classic rock. Like my house was, it's funny. My house when I was a kid was Elvis. It was a shrine to Elvis. I'm not joking. We had plates of Elvis in the house. We had stamps.
Wow.
Like it was a bit fucked up. Like when I think about it now, like there's way too much Elvis paraphernalia everywhere in the house. And so it's kind of weird because I was born late, and so my parents are relatively old. Like they were born in the 40s, right?
Okay.
So my dad's like hitting 80, right?
Okay.
So it was like I'm kind of the generation late from them. So I have like this really like this 60s Elvis, late 50s and 60s Elvis vibe that's just so kind sick. Of came through the house. So it was always vinyls of Elvis playing all the time. There was nothing else.
That's amazing.
And then from there, it kind of turned into my brother was an 80s kid, right? Because he was 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes home and he brings, I remember it was like 87, 88, and he brings home Appetite for Destruction, like the LP, the actual just fucking came out. And he put it on. I was this kid, like 5-6 years old. And I put it on and I'm like, you know, you say, right? The whole intro to Welcome. And I looked, I said, what the fuck is going on? Like, this blew my mind. So I turned it around, I see Slash, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God. Because I didn't even know who I wanted to be. Like, I was like, I don't want to be in this band. That's what I was thinking. I mean, I was like a 5-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And then I said, this guy with the bongos, he looks fucked up. What does he play? Guitar. Yeah. Okay, great. I got to learn how to play guitar. Like, that's literally so how that whole it started. And then from there, it was like, okay, well, who does Guns N' Roses like?
Mm.
I was like, okay. And I would read up in some magazine and I would just buy some magazine as I got older. Okay, Slash is a big fan of Aerosmith. Okay, who's Aerosmith? And then really start digging into Aerosmith. And Aerosmith, who did they like? Oh, Zeppelin and the Beatles. And then the Beatles and then the Stone. And then it kind of went back to Elvis. Like inevitably, they all ended up like Elvis. And then I was like, well, who's Elvis like?
Yeah.
And then it just kept on like kind of going back in that historical idea of like the bands and all this shit. But I noticed that every band that I liked or everything that I liked were always messy. Like they made mistakes. So to me, I always found that's what kept it human.
Yeah.
Almost the song. Like that's where even then when it shifted into like more of a soul R&B, like Teddy Pendergrass or fucking, you know, Bill Withers or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I would go into that route. I'd be like, oh man, these guys.
There's something about it.
It's just, it's real. It just feels like they got into a story. They got into the studio and they captured a moment. And then it happened to be like a fantastic moment.
Yeah.
And then just released it. So when you have those mixes, this is always the question that I wanted to ask. Because now you're working with artists that you're seeing, they're getting success. You know, a million streams, you know, 700,000, you know, 800,000, some 2 million. I think Cinzia is at 2 million on some of them.
Oh, so, yeah, on some of them. Yeah, I'm thinking her total Spotify. I'm like, yo, she's like at 10 million.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm just on certain tracks, it's like 2 million. When you're in the studio and you kind of finish, you finish the song, you worked on it, it's a month or 2 months, whatever it is, and then you're listening back with the artist. I always wondered if you just know in that moment that this is a great song and like what's the feeling that you're getting in those moments
that it's a good song. It's so weird, man. It's gonna sound really bad, but I tend to like over focus on my prod, on how things are hitting, how things are like getting you and this and that I literally kind of step away and I don't realize that the song's gonna be any good. Like I'm kind of like, oh, I'm pissed off at myself when I listen back.
You hear the mistakes
songs, I'm like, I hear like mixing things. I'll be like, even on some Cinzia songs that like are going to come out, I'm like, I wish I would have done this differently. I would have done this differently. But then when I finally hear it on Spotify or when I hear someone playing it or whatever, I'm like, yeah, no, that was sick. That was a sick song.
It must be. It's crazy because I feel, I understand you because whenever you work on something, you just only recognize the mistakes.
Yep.
You only recognize the things you would change.
Yeah, but no one else hears them.
No one else hears them. No one even knows what the hell you're talking about. They actually... You brought up something that they never even thought of. And then you just made them notice something that they never even would have listened to or heard or noticed. So how are you dealing with that? How do you kind of sometimes. Let go of that and just kind of let the song do what it needs to do and not be so hard on yourself.
Well, that's it. It was like my new rule for 2023, and it's been kind of working, is where I'm like, I don't care anymore about the prod. I don't care about what the production is. I just want it to be always a good song. Like, yeah. It has to be a cool song. Because what happens is when the song isn't that great, as a producer, you're overcompensating. So you're making the prod cooler. You're mm-hmm. adding cooler elements. No one cares. At the end of the day, no one cares. You're feature listening function. To the song, you're like, nothing's attaching this. Yeah. Like, I'm not getting attached. There's nothing happening for me, you know? And well, it's because the song isn't good. Nothing's catching your ear. And it's all in the melody, because the first thing you attach yourself to is the vocals.
Yeah.
Now, if the vocals suck, you won't care about how cool that synth is.
That's yeah, only for it's the background, right?
Yeah.
I remember at Vanier, I think it was Jacques Labelle had told me this. I don't know if, did you have him as a teacher?
I did.
Okay. I did. But he said something that I remember, it stuck with me. He's like, when you're producing or when you're writing or anything like that, or you're working with a band, he's like, think of it like a wall. And I said, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, maybe I probably smoked a J too that day. And I was like, what's going on, dude? And he's like, your drums and your bass are kind of like your, you know, the structural pieces, you know? And I don't know if maybe he was talking to me about walls because Italian background. He's like, oh, you probably understand construction. Yeah, that's it. I was like, now that I think about it now, I was like, why the fuck did he talk about a wall, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, so he's like, you know, the 4x4s in the back and the steel beams and all the shit. And I'm like, I get it. Okay, I got it. You know, I got it. So he says, okay, yeah, do this. Like, that's your drums and your bass, let's say, as an example. You're thinking in a band. He's like, your drywall, that's like your guitar. He goes, it's on top. It's a little more noticeable than the drums and the bass because, you know, there's the higher frequencies, the melodies and the guitars and all that stuff. He's like, but really, it was the only fucking thing anyone's ever looking at is the painting that's hanging on it. He goes, and that's your melodies. He goes, that's your vocals. That's whatever is shining on the top. He's like, so you could have an amazing wall, but if you have a shit painting, no one knows what's going on behind that.
Exactly.
That fucking piece of plywood or whatever it is. So it's funny you say that. Like, still, ultimately, no matter what you do, it's all fluff almost in the background if the melody just sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
And so now when you're working with artists, let's say that they're really connected to something and you're not vibing with it. How do you deal with it? Like, how do you kind of remove yourself?
Oh my God, bro, it happens. And it's like, it happens more often than not because not every song's a hit, right? To you, like it'll happen very often. But at the end of the day, you always find something you like about it. So it was just like, honestly, before coming here, I was working on a record that's like an EDM record that I'm like, this melody is not, it's not cutting it. But the artist wrote to me last night and's like, I showed my mom. She's crying. I love it so much. And I went like, huh, well, I was about to send her an email and say like, I don't think this is working. I had to stop and think and go, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to shatter her dreams and tell her like, yo, like this isn't right. I'm going to make something cool out of this.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm working on, is just to make it like, find always something that you're going to really attach to about that prod. When I say prod, I mean the whole thing, the production. That is really cool. And that's it. You just kind of, that's how you're able to get past that. It's like, oh, I really like the way I did that though. Listen to that drop.
Were you able to do something like that? Maybe, when did you start, by the way, producing? Like officially producing?
Officially producing, I'm going to say 2016.
Okay. So let's say we're back at 2016, Luca.
No.
Would you have been able to get over that?
Like you
removing
know what?
Yourself from it personally? And not removing yourself, but like trying to find another angle from it?
I think in 2016, my mindset was just like, look how cool this beat is. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really focusing on the actual song. And I didn't understand songwriting as much. Even though, like, yes, I was in bands and I understood how the songwriting process was. But when I was looking back at like how I used to write songs with my older bands, I wasn't even focusing like on what the song was trying to say and how cool the lyrics are and how, what's the message behind the whole song. I was always like, look at that cool riff. Look at this cool moment.
Yeah.
I was always trying to make cool moments in the song.
Yeah.
Or the whole vibe. Wow,
it wasn't about the whole experience. It was just a part of the song.
It was a part, or it was like it was just like, well, look how cool it's hitting. How cool it's hitting the speakers. Look how nice the mix is. Look how nice the vocals are. I was never focusing in on what the hell the song's about. And then I realized, yo, dude, you're going against the whole art of production. It's like, that's not right. And I was doing that for a while. And I'm like, shit. And I was always relying on, well, you're the singer. You're the artist. This is your song. I'm in charge of just bringing your song to life. Mm-hmm. Instead of kind of sitting down with the artist and going, what are you trying to say, man? Like, what do we say?
Questioning,
and then change the lyrics with them and be like, yo, get really involved. And I did that only like maybe 2 years ago, 2019, I'm mm-hmm. sitting down. I'm like, I'm not taking no bullshit no more. It was just like, I want to know what we're writing about. I want to be into everything we're doing, you know?
And that changed everything for you? That
kind it changed of- everything because sometimes it comes to those moments again, like you said, like sometimes you're just not into the song, but that other person, it's really hitting them hard. Okay, fine. Let's do it. I'll do the best I can. And that's it. And everyone's happy at the end. It's all good. I found something I like about it. The beat, I really like it. It's cool. Yeah. It's sitting nice. Everything's hitting well. I like it because I like to mix my own stuff too. It depends. Sometimes I'll send it to a mixing engineer.
Yeah, why mix on some and why not mix on others?
Because you spend too much time on it. When okay. you spend so much time, you don't hear the song anymore. Man, it's like I'll play a song for you that I spent too much time on. You'll be like, bro, that guitar is really loud in the song. And I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh man, really?
You just got lost in it at a certain point.
Yeah.
And so now when you're looking at the projects that are coming up, because it seems like there's a lot on the plate right now, mm-hmm. on your plate, what's coming up? Like what should... Okay, so one is, how do you kind of get people to work with you, I guess, now in the future? Are you a little more selective? And then two, like, what's the roadmap? Do you have an idea of, not a roadmap, but I guess what you're seeing in the next few months coming out?
Okay, so how do I get people to work with me? It's been through word of mouth a lot. It's mm-hmm. after I'll put something up on Spotify. I'll get, not on Spotify, but on Instagram or on Facebook, I'll get a few DMs from people and like, yo, I really like that. I was wondering if we can do some stuff. Or I'll reach out to people. And I'll be like, look, I vibe with your stuff. Let's get together and whatnot. So it's really just kind of, you know, as things are coming in.
Yeah, it's organically coming in.
It's organically coming in.
And what are some cool projects that you're working on right now?
So you know that that song, you know Preston Pablo? It's on the radio every day. Because I need you like the flowers the rain. That one. That guy. We have some stuff coming out together. So that's going to be cool. I don't know if it's going to be on like as a single, but I know it's going on his album.
Okay.
There's also this other guy, Zagata, who's amazing. He had some stuff on Virgin Radio. I think last year he was hitting like number one in Quebec. We have some stuff together coming out. And my God, I'm just, developing some people.
That's awesome, man.
It's been cool, man.
And so now for you, this is, I'm seeing such a, like I said earlier, like this evolution from the kid that walked into my house to learn how to play guitar to this now. Could you have ever imagined really this, like when you think about it now, let's say if you look back at yourself from 10 years ago and tell yourself where you are today, would you have a hard time believing that right now?
I would have a very hard time because I was super shy and insecure.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know how to talk to girls. When I was talking to you.
All you have is girls now.
Well, no.
It went from not being able to talk to them is like getting the best
that's
vocals.
That's all I have. Yeah, that's it. I think I have like one male artist and it's a guy I'm developing. But no, man, I was really shy. And it's so funny because I would talk to you. You were this confident, like I looked up to you as a kid and it's so funny because if you think back and you're laughing because it's like, how did you look up to me? At the time, like I'm sure that you were going through some shit or whatever.
For sure.
But dude, it's so funny. You had the long hair, long curly hair, smoking in your garage, and we're waiting for my dad. You're like, listen, bud, like all you have to tell her is this and that. And I, because I would be dating and this, and you'd give me dating advice after a session. Dude, like I was shy. I was a shy kid. So I would never imagine to what, like, you know, where it came.
I'm sure your parents would not have been happy knowing the shit.
Oh, no, they smelled. They were like, why do you smell like cigarettes? I don't know. And then eventually it was like, bro, can I just
got the worst guitar teacher ever. I'm like ripping cigarettes with you.
Oh, my God, it's the best. It was so funny.
No, dude, I know we went through a whole kind of history and everything. And I'm just happy for you, man. I'm seeing everything that's coming up. It's so fun watching this stuff. You were somebody that was on like my radar that I really wanted to kind of see how that happened, right? Because I knew you as a kid. And then seeing all this stuff, it's like I would always be proud of like seeing you there. And I don't know why. It was like I felt like maybe that teacher part of me was still just, I would see you succeed at this next time. I'd be like, oh, fuck, man.
It's because I think I never stopped in music. That's why.
I think it was that. I was like, man, because I remember if I have to talk personally about like even the teaching.
Please.
I would know like instantly when a kid walked in and I'm like, this, not that the kid's bad. He's not interested or she's not interested. Like it's her mom or her dad or his dad or whatever it is that is maybe living their life through that person to come and play guitar. And like, I could think of like three people off the top of my mind right now.
Wow.
But then there was cases like you, there was the kid Dan, and like, I would just get these kids that walked in and you just saw that, fuck, they're good.
Hungry.
They're hungry and they're good. And there's a natural talent. So I remember when I would look at you play, I would say, man, I hope this fucking kid continues. I hope he continues. I don't know in what. Like, it would be amazing if he becomes like this amazing performing artist. And that's one element. That's one road. And I don't know if maybe you felt like that too, but when you were younger, it was like it was the only road you could take to be a musician. If you weren't a performing artist,
oh, dude, yeah.
There was nothing. I felt like if you weren't the top band in the world, what's the point of playing music?
Yeah.
It was almost, what's the point?
Yeah.
And now seeing you kind of go down this other road, which is, you know, you went on the production side, the mixing side, and really being behind the scenes, I see this kind of, that was where the growth started. It was kind of like when you let go of the performing part and really the producing part.
Yeah.
So seeing that happen and seeing that evolution, I've always told myself, I said, I'd love to hear how that happened.
Oh, bro, it's literally, the transition was because we had no money. Because when I was in the VAR, all the guys were like, studio, we have to pay, so I don't know. I was like, guys, I'm already studying this in school. I got you. Let's do this. And so I was like, what? And like, actually, at the time, I wasn't even in the audio program yet. I think I was actually just kind of learning. I'm like, guys, I understand this stuff. It's all good. And I kind of started like that, you know, because we had no money. So I was like, it's okay. And then eventually, since that band kind of stopped, I'm like, but I like doing this.
Yeah.
Like, I was like,
it peaked something.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Look, I'm wishing you all the best, man. And I hope in the next few years or even whatever, few months, we hear some more stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And then retouch and then see how things have grown again in the future.
I'm
and
always going to come back on this show.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much. Sir. And see you soon, man.
Yes, sir. Cheers.
Cheers.
That was sick, bro.
Oh, so
happy
good.
You, man.
Yes. Same for you, man. It's going to be sick.
Imagine nothing was recorded.
Oh, my God. Bro, I thought that about. I'm like, we're saying gold right now.
Yeah, but this is a great time. Like, this is gold, Jerry.
Yeah.
This is gold.
Oh, my God.
Hey, this is Steph, and thank you so much for listening to the show. Just a reminder that new episodes will be released every Thursday at 10 a.m. on all platforms. If you like the show, you know, leave a review, follow, subscribe, share with a friend. And if you want to know more about my guests, past, present, or future, follow me at DMW Podcast on Instagram. My name is Steph, and this is the Dead Man Walking Podcast.